On calling home this morning, Alex Jones in Tel Aviv. Alex grew up in Christchurch and went to Kashmir High School and the University of Canterbury. Before Israel, he worked as a tour guide in Europe for nearly 10 years, based in Paris and then Barcelona. He's also done volunteer work in Africa. He's a very seasoned traveller. It's been 6 years since Alex has made it back home. Hello, Alex. Boker tov. Is that good morning?
Boker tov. Very good. Kia ora.
Kia ora to you. You work as the head of an Israeli-Palestinian tourism educational cooperative, the Green Olive Collective, supporting human rights and democratic values. What does it do?
I always say there's kind of two ways you could sort of describe it. On the one hand, we look quite a lot like any other normal tour company. We give tours, we have tour guides, we have buses, we have a website. On the other hand, we're a lot more than that, where we have five Israeli partners, five Palestinian partners, and one New Zealand partner now working together, which is really very rare in this country or countries, depending on how you look at it. Most of the guides come from a kind of activist background, and most of the tours have a kind of a political lens. So they're not just about seeing the sites, although we would show people sites, but it's also more about sort of exploring, yeah, the political background, which I think is so important to understand anywhere, but especially here. And then as well as giving tours, we have lots of other kind of projects alongside, which most tour companies wouldn't have. We have a fair trade platform online where we sell products from underrepresented communities, and we organize volunteer camps. So we have a kind of extra side to the business that's maybe a bit different from most tour companies.
Yeah, I noticed that. Back home, John Minto is currently touring New Zealand to alert us to what he calls Israel's apartheid policies, and various prominent people around the world are calling for cultural boycotts and so on, and at the same time are being accused of anti-Semitism for doing so. So you're conscious of all this swirling around what you do too, Alex.
Absolutely, yeah. It's impossible to avoid. And in a way, that was kind of why I wanted to do this, because I've seen a few other expats here who have kind of made the choice to blinker themselves to it. At best, it's sort of a shame, and at worst, it's a bit disingenuous, if you ask me. And I'm really glad that I'm able to kind of engage with the stuff every day. And it's not always easy, and there are tough conversations with a lot of people, and the work itself is challenging. I'm comfortable that I'm doing what I think is good, and I find it really rewarding to make this part of my work.
You've got a Palestine experience, an Israel experience, a Jerusalem experience, and one in Jordan. So if I came and signed up to your Palestine experience, what sort of thing would I get?
You wouldn't be getting much, because it's almost impossible for tourists to enter the country. But pre, and we hope soon post-COVID, on a Palestine experience, you would get ideally a homestay. We really try and put people in homes. I think that's a really cool way to see, you know, a local culture, and to see kind of the unfiltered and uncensored side of a place. So we've got some great families that we work with. You'd also take tours with, you know, real experts who can kind of explain and unravel the politics. You'd also taste food. I mean, food is always a good way to understand a culture, but especially here, food is one of the few things which, you know, most Israelis and most Palestinians will share quite comfortably. So food is always really interesting. And you'd see the sites, you know, there's amazing sites to be seen that Palestinians are very proud of. So we'd see, for example, the Church of the Nativity built around the site where they say Jesus was born. You'd see ancient archaeology, you'd maybe see the Dead Sea, beautiful mosques, beautiful scenery, and beautiful history.
Right. And I want to get to the sites as well, not just the politics. But 20% of the Israel population now, I think, more or less, are Palestinian citizens of Israel. How does that work day to day in terms of harmony? I know there are all sorts of frictions and exclusions, but as a Kiwi in Tel Aviv, it seems by and large functional, Alex, or is it always simmering as well?
Yeah, I think both of those things are true kind of simultaneously. You know, I was pretty shocked. I think a lot of people were this year when the kind of intercommunal violence kicked off. There are a lot of places that had seemed pretty peaceful. You know, they talk about the C word, coexistence here. And it seemed like things were getting along pretty well. And the violence was a big shock. But at the same time, day to day, people do get along with their lives almost always. You know, that was a little spurt of violence which lasted a couple of weeks. But just as quickly as things blew up, things have simmered back down again. And, you know, living as a Kiwi, like you say, in Tel Aviv, it's very easy to forget that you're somewhere with this conflict. You know, you can easily go weeks, months on end and, you know, not come across it if you choose to. And I think especially as a Kiwi, you can, or as a foreigner, I should say, you can use that almost to your advantage. You know, I can travel more freely in Israel and Palestine than most Israelis and most Palestinians can. And that's also something which has been quite beneficial in my work, is that I can visit, you know, both sides of our collective in a way that is much more difficult for the others. And generally, I think people are, you know, Israelis and Palestinians, so generous with their time, with their opinions, and they're just great hosts. You know, the Middle East is famous for it. And I've been very lucky that people have definitely embraced me as a foreigner. I'm not seen as one or the other.
I saw on Bloomberg that booster shots are bringing Tel Aviv back to life. Is that how you would describe it?
I think that happened long before the boosters kicked in. We had some pretty intense lockdowns. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be talking to Aucklanders about intense lockdowns. Yeah, we've come out of it. And it was certainly helped by the fact that people were getting vaccinated. And it's also true, as maybe this Bloomberg article was saying, that there are now a lot of people with third doses. But I don't see a huge connection. I think that we kind of came back into that regular life before the boosters was a big part of it. The back to life thing is definitely very prevalent here. You know, you feel very few COVID restrictions anymore. The borders are still the one place you do, but in daily life, you know, bars, restaurants, museums, those kind of things are pretty free now. We do have a green pass system which you have to show to get into certain places, but that's been fairly straightforward here. I mean, we haven't seen massive protests in Israel against that like we have maybe in Australia or some other places, France, around the world. So the general tourists still can't come in, but the rumors are good. Yeah, there have been some financially very tough times for us. It's been a long time coming, but the signs are definitely good, and we're excited to welcome a few visitors, that's for sure, because it's been a while.
Is the guiding spirit behind Green Olive Collective to end the occupation?
Yeah, how that exactly is done is a great question. I did study the conflict, so maybe I should have a better answer for this than I do. But at the end of the day, I'm not. I don't have a magic wand to end things how I'd like to. I think that the occupation kind of has to end one way or another. I don't really see a way to carry on like that. But of course, you know, it can't come at the expense of both sides feeling secure. And I think that's what Israelis kind of think of when they hear ending the occupation. A lot of them feel like that means they're going to live in fear or without security or something. But yeah, the work we do definitely has a political agenda, and we're quite, you know, aware of that. We don't endorse like one state solution, two state solution. You know, as an organization, we encourage all of our different guides and different partners to kind of have their own opinion and to say that, and, you know, to tell people that is their opinion, and you know, try and back it up with fact. You can definitely make the case for it being apartheid. But I also feel like people who call it apartheid, and then you kind of have people who disagree, you really get hung up on the definition. And obviously, if you really break it down to the South African model of apartheid, well, it's not exactly the same. So in many ways, it isn't the same. And you kind of end up with the debating the minutiae, which is a real shame. And I think the bigger picture is much more important. And, you know, the injustice and human rights violations, whether they're called apartheid or not, they're definitely going on, and we should address those. And like I said, I believe the best way to do that is to come here, to explore, to understand, to engage, rather than to boycott or to, you know, to keep away from it all.
You've certainly placed yourself in an interesting situation, and it's different from your previous work, isn't it? I know you know a lot about tours because before Israel, you worked as a tour guide in Europe for nearly 10 years, and that would have been exciting too, actually.
It was, absolutely. Yeah, it was an amazing way to, you know, to spend the bulk of my 20s. It's a super fun industry to work in. I was able to travel a lot. I even came back to NZ and worked several summers in New Zealand, which was amazing to kind of show my own country. You know, you earn enough money to live a good life and to spend that money having fun. And in my 20s, I didn't have any, you know, dependents. It was an awesome ride. And it's cool that I'm able to kind of combine some of what I studied with that tourism experience now and kind of do tourism in a slightly more, yeah, kind of challenging way and kind of than maybe I did in the past.
4 million people in Tel Aviv, and you live pretty much in the middle?
I do indeed, yeah, pretty much right in the centre. It's a very small country, and there's a lot of people in it. You feel it, right? There's not a huge amount of kind of green open spaces in Tel Aviv. We do have the beach, which is amazing. But I love it. Incredible nightlife, you know, restaurants, museums, and then the beach, of course, is like the X factor. There are days when you miss the great outdoors of New Zealand sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine that. The beach isn't famous, but it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the whole country, to be fair, you know, there's actually very few parts of the beach, you know, that whole coastline of Israel, which is a couple of hundred kilometers long. The vast majority of it is public and open and, yeah, beautiful. I mean, the weather is phenomenal. We can swim like very comfortably 9 months of the year. But yeah, beautiful sand, and the beach in Tel Aviv is right in the city. So it's, you know, from where I live, I can jump on my bike and 5-10 minutes, I'm on the beach.
You weren't allowed to marry your wife, Lenore, who was your girlfriend, I think, when you moved there 4 years ago. Why not?
Yeah, so there's a law in Israel that prevents mixed marriages. If you're Christian, you can marry a Christian. If you're Muslim, you can marry a Muslim. If you're a Jew, you can marry a Jew. But there always has to be a kind of a religious element to it, even if it's very small. You know, for example, you might have a Jewish wedding and the people getting married may not be that religious, but at some point the rabbi has to come in and bless them. There's no such thing as a kind of secular celebrant. A lot of Israelis will choose to get married abroad, and marriages abroad are completely accepted here. So it's kind of a workaround to kind of appease the religious authorities. But it does mean that for people of different backgrounds, it's impossible to get married under the Israeli system. So yeah, we got married officially. We happened to be in New York. We got married in City Hall in New York a couple of years ago, and the wedding itself hasn't taken place. We were hoping to have like a big celebration last year that had to get postponed because of COVID, but the paperwork is accepted here, so we're recognized in public as being married, even if we weren't allowed to get married here itself.
Lovely. I'm glad that's a happy partial ending. Is Lenore from Tel Aviv originally?
No, she's from the north of the country. It's a bit greener up there, nice kind of rolling hills. But yeah, we both live in Tel Aviv since we moved back to Israel together 4 years ago.
Greener with the rolling hills, but it never gets to New Zealand standards, does it? So I imagine you'd miss going out in the bush in New Zealand. There's none of that in Israel, really.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to beat New Zealand, that's for sure. The green bush of NZ is something we'd struggle to replicate here. But I think in general, you know, the springtime in the north of Israel would surprise most people. You know, there's this reputation that Israel is just one big desert, but you go up north and you can find nice waterfalls and you can find nice greenery. But yeah, hard to beat the southwest of the South Island, that's for sure.
Alex Jones is calling home from Tel Aviv. So you rent an apartment. Housing's an issue there, as it is in New Zealand. House prices have doubled for you in the past decade. They don't appear to be slowing down.
They don't. Yeah, it's really tough. Rent is very expensive. You know, we've got friends in Zurich and New York, and they are shocked by how much we're paying here. But at the same time, we do choose to live in the most expensive city. We're right in the heart of it. If you lived somewhere further out, you could afford to. But yeah, it's expensive for sure.
Are you near the White City, all those fantastic Bauhaus buildings that the German emigres built once upon a time?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not in one of those 1930s Bauhaus buildings myself, but yeah, some of the buildings which are listed as UNESCO World Heritage Sites are a couple of minutes walk away. Yeah, good, 100 or 200 buildings which are beautifully restored, really, really close to where I live, and it's definitely kind of changing the character of the city. It's really nice.
The news coverage of your part of the world here, of course, is generally sober or grim, for all the obvious reasons. But Time Out magazine calls Tel Aviv the funnest city in the world. It's a city that never sleeps.
It's a real hub, I think, for young people in the whole region. They come here, Israelis and Palestinians who are citizens of Israel will come here. Because it is a liberal place, it is a place with, like we said, the nightlife and the bars and the restaurants. So it's such a hub. If there is a bit of conflict going on, people are able to come here and release. So the stakes are higher, so you party harder. I don't know.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that. It's funny, isn't it, that a town so close to the beating heart of 2,000 years of fervent religion is so hedonistic.
Yeah, it's the contrast is amazing. And the country's so small, and that's almost what I love most about it. I can be on a train and it's 35 minutes and you're in Jerusalem, which is a world away, and another 20 or 30 minutes the other side of that and you can be visiting a Bedouin community living in the occupied Palestinian territories, who live off the grid with no running water, no electricity. And those three worlds are just completely different from one another, and the contrast and the density of it all is like there's nowhere else like it, and it's endlessly fascinating. Honestly, I love it.
The food is said to be amazing too. What's a favorite local dish of yours, please?
Ooh, the food is amazing. I think the Tel Aviv benefits from that kind of Jewish diaspora, that people have brought food from just all over the world. Favorite dish? I love the Yemenite Jewish food. They have these amazing kind of rolled kind of pastry breads. We live in an area with lots of Ethiopian Jews, so they have this kind of spongy sour bread which they make with a grain called teff. The bread is called injera, which they, with these amazing kind of lentil dips. I guess the famous food is falafel and shawarma and pita bread and all that kind of stuff, which is also great, but that's much that's like your everyday food,
Politics and conflict aren't recommended conversation starters in most societies. But I get the impression from what you said earlier that people are quite happy to talk about all that, whether they're Israeli or Palestinian or wherever they come from.
Yes, I think there's definitely an element that they're trying to convince you that what they think is the correct way to think and the right way to think. But there's... you read sometimes in guidebooks to different places, make sure you don't mention politics. I feel like that's the opposite here. People are really keen to talk about it, very, very willing to engage. The debate is very open and very fervent, yes. Be prepared to kind of back up anything you say with facts and with good arguments, because you're going to be chewed out if they think you're talking nonsense. But I love that about both Israelis and Palestinians, that is that willingness to talk about things, to engage, to debate. That gives me actually a lot of hope as well, that people, maybe they're not always changing their minds, but it's definitely out in the open. Every taxi driver, every waiter, you want to ask them, almost invariably you'll find a willing ear and a willing mouth to talk about this stuff.
Seeing as you're good with itineraries, in Tel Aviv or in Israel itself, where would you send people if they had a week and they wanted to be both entertained, as you say, but also informed?
The two big attractions, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, the museums, the beach, the restaurants of Tel Aviv, and then the history, the religion, and maybe more of the kind of conflict side of things in Jerusalem. I definitely think that visiting, the occupied territories and Israel is very easy. A lot of people don't understand that as a tourist, it's very straightforward to cross checkpoints and very safe. The Dead Sea, floating in the saltiest and lowest place on the world is a pretty incredible and unique experience. You can visit the desert. Hiking in the mountains is pretty special. You can also snorkel in the semi-tropical seas of the Red Sea in the very south. And even in the winter, you can ski in the north. So there's a huge diversity. And I think, you know, for a visitor to be able to experience all that, it's quite easy in the space of a week or 10 days.
Do you come across many other Kiwis?
No, not many at all. I have one Kiwi friend who's here. We meet up to watch all the All Blacks or talk about the Black Caps.
Speaking of the All Blacks, you've got your first ever professional rugby team there. Did you know?
I did not know.
I'm telling you something. The Tel Aviv Heat, I think they've got South Africans and Fijians and local players in the mix, but we couldn't see any Kiwis on the team.
Oh,
you'll be going along to see them.
I was going to say, I wish I could nominate myself. I haven't played rugby since I was 12 years old, so I'm not sure I'd be up for a professional game, but I might pop down and see how good they are and watch a bit. That would be great. The Tel Aviv Heat. All right. Thanks for letting me know.
Has Lenore seen New Zealand?
She has, yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
We did an amazing trip around the country over a course of nearly 2 months. I'd just finished working that summer as a tour guide, so I used all my connections that I could and tried to get the best hookups to show her the very best, and she absolutely loved it. We had an amazing time, and it was, yeah, I felt really kind of proud showing off all the best bits in such a short amount of time. You really kind of appreciate how amazing New Zealand is when you kind of see it through a foreigner's eye, and you can like do all those amazing things that you might do in the course of a lifetime if you're from New Zealand, but when you're visiting, you kind of cram them into a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and it really does you know, drive home just how amazing the place is. So yeah, we both love New Zealand, and we could be back there. But I think at this stage, we wouldn't go back unless we had a kind of specific reason. We wouldn't move back without a, you know, a real job or a real opportunity that pulled us back, you know.
That's what you're good at, showing off the best bits in a short space of time, I imagine.
So we really hope that things will change in the near future and we can get back, because we would absolutely love to.
Did you get COVID?
I did, yes. Was it almost exactly a year ago? I got COVID. I was quite lucky, didn't have a very severe case. I have no lasting side effects, just like a bad flu for me. I had a, you know, a day or two of fever.
And just finally, speaking of life after and New Zealand opening up, there is an emerging life after COVID, because we will be hanging out for that at some point. And obviously you're in that place in Israel now, even though, of course, it's got a very long tail.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, even though we have many people with the third booster dose, there was another outbreak just last month here with very high case numbers again. But yeah, the reality, I think, is that it's something we're going to have to live with and deal with for maybe years to come. Who knows?
What's a typical way of saying goodbye as we leave you?
Yes, in Hebrew you would say litrot.
That could litrot. Be a bit hard for our tongues. just say it once more.
Litrot.
Okay. Thank you very much for being able to join us.
It's been a pleasure. Cheers. And thank you very much.
Alex Jones in Tel Aviv, RNZ National.